We hear a lot about American exceptionalism, but there is one country that in many ways compares pretty closely to the U.S., Brazil, in our own hemisphere. Like the U.S., it's the biggest country, population-wise, on its continent. It also has a problematic history of slavery and treatment of indigenous people. And now both Brazil and the U.S. are governed by so-called strongman populists who say things that are not politically correct, and throngs of people adore them for it. And critics say both men are chipping away at the foundations of democracy. The World's Rupa Shenoy was recently in Brazil, exploring many of the similarities and differences between what's happening there and here. Hey, Rupa.
Hi, Marco.
I think this is a great idea, comparing the U.S. and Brazil, especially right now. Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, like Trump, I mean, he's as much a disruptor as he is a character, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Bolsonaro is an ex-army captain, a longtime congressman. He's far right, pro-gun, anti-political correctness. He said racist things, homophobic things.
And what's he done as president so far?
He's already made a lot of controversial moves, like cutting the education budget and proposing more military schools. And we'll be talking about that later this week. In many ways, he seems to want to go back to the days of dictatorship in Brazil, and that scares a lot of people.
Right, back to the 1960s. What about on immigration? Because that's Donald Trump's big issue, and Brazil has a border with Venezuela, right?
Right. There's no wall or fence between Brazil and Venezuela. People can walk between the two countries, and they do, but it's a long march through rough terrain. The easier way is driving. There's just one road from Venezuela to Brazil. It runs through the small city of Pacaraima.
Ah, como te llega hoy?
24-year-old Rosangela Gonzalez sits on a suitcase next to the road, breastfeeding her newborn baby.
Camilo,
that's his name. Back home in Venezuela, she couldn't find him a doctor or food.
No hay nada.
The situation drove Gonzalez and her husband here. They're joining her father-in-law, who's already in Brazil. For now, they've asked the Brazilian government for shelter.
We'll probably be allowed into the shelter because we have a child. But single men traveling alone, it's more complicated for them.
Gonzalez and her family would face a very different situation than they do now if they had arrived here last summer.
Tensions boiled after a local shopkeeper was robbed and beaten. Venezuelans were blamed. In return, locals attacked the immigrants' two makeshift camps, firing shots and burning their belongings.
It made international news when residents of Pacaraima chased hundreds of Venezuelans back over the border.
Todo mundo me conhece aqui. Dona Rita, todo mundo conhece.
Dona Rita, Mrs. Rita, has owned a restaurant on a main drag here for 30 years. Everyone in Pacaraima knows her and tells her everything, she says. And everyone will tell you the same thing. She says they feel like they've been portrayed as the bad guys. Meanwhile, Doña Jeta's restaurant has gotten broken into twice.
Before, I'd stay here until midnight. Now I can't do that. It's too dangerous to walk the streets then. Who wouldn't be upset by that? Anybody would be.
For Doña Jeta, the issue was crime in her neighborhood. That's it. She didn't care about geopolitics. But in Brazil and across the world, leaders were discussing regime change in Venezuela. In January, President Trump hinted at possible military action to help overthrow President Nicolas Maduro and put opposition leader Juan Guaido in his place. That same month, the new president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, took office. He sent humanitarian aid to the border to send into Venezuela. In response, Maduro shut the official border crossing in Pacaraima for 3 months. Venezuelans kept coming on foot. Single migrants, mostly men, slept on the streets of Pacaraima or at the bus station. But by the time the Venezuelan government reopened the border, there was another option for families, because the Brazilian military had been deployed at the border. All three branches of the country's armed forces have roles in a sprawling encampment set up to receive the incoming Venezuelans. Inside a big room with wooden benches, families wait for hours for a series of appointments to get their documentation or a mandatory vaccine or to see a doctor. If need be, families stay in small white buildings, subdivided into rooms filled with bunk beds. People lay on thin mattresses, reading magazines or sleeping. They seem to be on friendly terms with the troops. Some soldiers end the day attending a recital by Venezuelan children. The atmosphere here is respectful and relaxed, and that's surprising given what Bolsonaro said about immigration. When he was a congressman, he called refugees the scum of the earth, and he's supported Donald Trump's immigration policies. Here he is on Fox News, speaking through an interpreter.
The vast majority of potential immigrants do not have good intentions or do not intend to do the best or do good to the U.S. people.
Still on the ground, Brazil is welcoming to migrants, for now.
Our goal is humanity, to treat the human being.
Major André Albuquerque runs one of the largest family shelters in the city of Boa Vista, 3 hours' drive from the border. The refuge houses more than 1,000 people and is almost full. It's raining hard today, and the ground is quickly turning to mud.
Eu acho que, em primeiro lugar, a gente, o latino, ele tem uma essência sentimental muito forte.
I have a family, I have a wife, I have children. I try to look after the refugees as if they were my own children and family members.
Brazil's doing a lot more than just providing shelter. The country set up a system to integrate arriving Venezuelans by sending them to other parts of the country, where there are jobs that need filling. It's not like in the U.S. Migrants get documentation within a day or two, which allows them to work in Brazil right away. Daryl Huard, a Canadian refugee officer with the United Nations, helps match Venezuelans with possible employers.
It's a very unique program, to be honest.
Huard says it's rare for the U.N. to work so closely with the military, but in this case, he says, it's working.
I mean, you can look around you. It's just amazingly well-organized.
Well-organized and well-funded. Huard says countless organizations are helping here. International aid agencies, UNICEF, USAID. And he says a lot of the financial support has long come from the U.S. In 2018, the U.S. gave the U.N. Refugee Agency more than $17 million to help with Venezuelan migrants. That's increased to nearly $28 million so far this year.
I don't want to be critical because realistically what's happening there is very unique. I'm talking about at the U.S.-Mexican border. But in terms of the support the U.S. government and the American people give in general through NGOs, it's extremely important. And it's a huge portion of what we do comes from the U.S. So the American people are doing a really good job. It just maybe that's not being shown enough in the media because they're doing it indirectly.
But there's always the possibility that U.S. funding could be cut. And despite all the effort and money, there are people who are left behind, like single Venezuelan migrants who sleep for weeks at the bus station because they can't get into shelters, or people who choose against being relocated, like Ruber Monero and his family. He says they stayed in Venezuela as long as they could, but a year ago, they had to come here. Monero lifts his 2-year-old daughter, Raquel, to show her back.
She's going to need surgery. This bone here, she has a bone spur.
He says she was in a local Brazilian hospital for months, but she still needs an operation.
Hospital officials tell me they can't help, that they don't have the resources. I have all the documentation. I just need a surgeon to sign off.
Monero still thinks she has a better chance of getting an operation here, relatively close to the border, where the military is mobilized to help refugees. That's why he hasn't enrolled in the voluntary relocation program. Monero admits there's another reason, too.
Well, I'm hoping that one day Venezuela changes, that Maduro goes.
He dreams of life back in Venezuela, of reuniting with his parents and living in his own home, rather than a makeshift shelter.
It's not so nice to live like this. The mattresses all get wet when it rains. Tonight we'll be sleeping on wet mattresses.
But, he says, they'll still be grateful for shelter. and grateful to the Brazilian government. For The World, Rupa Shenoy, Boa Vista, Brazil.
We're going to be hearing Rupa's stories from Brazil throughout this week. Tomorrow, she looks at how the new Brazilian president is stirring up a centuries-old debate about which lands belong to indigenous people.